T-Rex Arms receives a lot of questions from folks who are in the military and on their way back to civilian life, wondering how they can plug back into the private sector. And while I don't feel particularly qualified to speak to that, today's guest really is. We're going to talk about memes, humor, deeper stuff, and of course, getting involved in community. Welcome back to T-Rex Talk. I have a fantastic guest today. He's not someone who's in the firearm industry, but he represents T-Rex and T-Rex customers really well. I think that we got four quadrants of people that pay attention to us on the internet. We have Instagram people and generally meme enjoyers. And then we have some serious folks who appreciate the deeper philosophy and ideology that we talk about in some of our videos and this podcast. We got a lot of military guys, and then there's also non-military guys who are involved in the civilian world and are interested in business stuff. And my guest today is Lance Kapton, a guy who is all of those four quadrants in one person. So it's great having you on the show. I'm going to just call you Cap, if that is all right, since using internet handles here.
Yeah, it's fine. It's always funny being called Lance Kapton because, you know, I do have a name, but it's always makes me laugh. So you can call me whatever.
So, real quick, without any details, is your desire for anonymity primarily your past life in the Marine Corps or your current life in corporate America, or both?
It's a little bit of both. I'd say more so current role in corporate America, and really just I wish it was something really cool. I wish it was like, you know, I was doing something incredibly cool, and I don't want my family's identities to be leaked. It's not anything that cool. Really, my goal for this whole deal, I don't ever want it to get wrapped up around me and my name or my family or anything like that. I don't want it to be about me as a person. I just want it to be about the ideas I'm putting out. And if people like that, that's great. But I want them to take those ideas and not have them be influenced by me as a person. Take them, weigh them, because I do believe that a lot of, you know, what we talk about is objectively true. So I want them to see those things without, you know, being obscured by me and kind of my life and things like that. But there's also the employment piece. I don't ever want that to get dragged into my employer. Or on the flip side of that, I don't want that to kind of make me have to temper down what I say about certain things. And I'm sure y'all, you know, you guys can relate to that because you put out some very bold statements. A little different with a family business because, you know, you say, you're going to call my boss? That's my brother. He believes the same thing as me. Yes. I don't have that luxury at the moment. So I just try to keep those separate, really out of respect for, you know, an employer that has treated me very well.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, so let's get right into it. You are on the internet two things under the same nom de plume. You are probably the funniest memer, and I would say you are a legit meme lord on Instagram. But you also have a Substack, which is this sounds slightly insulting, surprisingly deep and thoughtful and inspiring and motivational, coming from such an occasionally edgy and always hilarious meme lord. So do those things, are those two sides of the same coin for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think the whole meme world, and I mean, a couple of years ago, like the military meme world was just insane. Back when the tournaments and stuff used to go on, it was just absolutely out of control. It's kind of calmed down a little bit in recent years. And now, you know, it's a little more calm now. But I do think they're two sides of the same coin in that when you're making a meme about military life, there are certain trends and things that you identify that are universally understood and are universally humorous, and things you've all, you know, no matter who you are, if you came through boot camp or OCS, you've gone through certain things, especially in a place as small as the Marine Corps. And so when you look for those trends and things that you can laugh about with other people all around the world, with those shared experiences, I think that also brings up more serious things that you've had shared experiences, whether it's, you know, veterans committing suicide, faith and questioning, and guys being in barracks far from home and saying, you know, what's the point of all this? Do I really want to be alive? All these kind of things. And that's not to say that I'm that involved in like the veteran suicide world. There's a lot of guys that do a lot of good work with that. That's not really my emphasis in my stuff. I do talk to guys that deal with that. But as you know, I'm kind of more focused on like, all right, what is the meaning of all this? Why am I here? And that's kind of a segue for me to say, hey, there's a reason you feel that way. It's because, you know, you were made by a loving God for these reasons. And here's what you can do with that information. So I think they are two sides of the same coin, you know, a funny side and a more serious side. But I found that the one is a good entrance to the other. So a lot of guys, especially type A personalities, guys in the military or gun culture or whatever, they're not going to come up to you and say, you know, how do I read my Bible or how do I pray? It just feels weird. They don't want to be that serious. It's awkward, but they are willing to laugh and to reach out over something humorous. And then over time, that can develop into more of a relationship where you have the equity with that person to say, I notice you're going through this. You know, you want to hear what I think about it. You don't have to, but if you want to hear what I think about it, I'd love to share it with you. So it's kind of a, I don't want to say a gateway drug, but sort of a gateway to, we can laugh about these things. Let's find the things we have in common. And that gives me the ability to then share things that are a bit more serious.
Yeah, it's. I think it also is a great relationship starter and sort of icebreaker for those deeper conversations. So let's get into your Substack. First of all, I want to recommend to listeners of the podcast that yeah, this is an Instagram page that is very funny and worth following, but also the Substack is solid meditations on life, and some of them are. Pretty specifically for guys with a similar background to you, but even I have really appreciated and enjoyed a lot of the stuff that you have written. You can tell this because you've probably seen me in other videos, but you can also tell me that that I haven't done all of the physical challenges that you sent out earlier this year in the Gods Gorillas series. Not all of those weights were lifted. That you recommended. But I was incredibly inspired by the Bible study part and convicted by the not lifting. So I am remedying that slowly. I did do a fair amount of push-ups with small children on my back at times. So I
That's
attempted.
one of the best workouts there is. That massive testosterone booster, push-ups with kids on your back.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that you would really like to accomplish with the Substack? You have a pretty good following, and I think that a lot of T-Rex folks would benefit, especially guys that have been in the military. We get good questions at T-Rex, as I've mentioned to you before. Guys who have been in and are now moving to the private sector and sort of the challenge of that transition. I would say that in addition to those guys, I find your Substack, your articles, your thoughts really interesting there. What is your main goal that you're trying to accomplish?
I don't know that I really have an overall goal, to be honest. I think for me, a lot of that is I'm somebody that processes things as I write. I've always been that way. Writing has helped me just kind of get what I'm thinking out and sort of work through it. So I wrote a lot of that when I was transitioning out, even as I was doing it, or recently, you know, recent to doing it. So it was kind of a way for me to like process what I was doing in a way to better share that with people instead of just, you know, vomiting my thoughts out. So I'm kind of an external processor in that sense. I would say overall, there's a couple things. One is to encourage guys who are going through that because I know it can be tough. Not even just the job part, but when you go from a group of friends, you know, in the military or a team or whatever, you know, you wake up one day, you don't have that anymore. And for me, it wasn't that hard for me because I have, you know, a wonderful wife, a whole bunch of kids that are just amazing. And so, like, I love being home. Home is my favorite place on earth. Even when I was in, more so even now that I'm out. But a lot of guys don't have that. And even some guys that do have that, they still really miss the community piece, whether it was the barracks, just being around people all the time that are kind of like-minded, that you get close with through shared suffering and misery. So I'd say that's probably the foremost goal, is just to let guys know, like, this is a universal feeling when you get out. This is not rare to feel lonely or to feel like you've lost your purpose. And that's a big one I didn't anticipate when I got out, was you really lose. And you can disagree, like we can all disagree about whether what the military is doing right now is super valuable or just or right. All of that aside, you still have this shared feeling of like we're doing something that matters. We have a shared mission and a shared goal. We're very like-minded. Well, when you get out, all that kind of goes away. Sometimes overnight, sometimes over, you know, the course of some time. And so I think one of my goals is just to let guys know, like, this is normal. This feeling that you feel and that you see a lot on Instagram or Reddit or Twitter about these guys thinking about like the good old days, even if some of those days were like combat deployments and living in misery, they miss that. They miss it a lot. And they say, like, those were the best days of my life. I never felt that way. I didn't have that exciting of a career. So I was never like, I just want to go back to, this point in time. Again, I love being home, love my family. I'm kind of a homebody. But I recognize that for some guys, that was the highlight of their life, being with, super close friends in these places where they were feeling validated. They were feeling like they were really serving a good mission. And so I hope that through this platform, I can just let guys know, like, you're not going through something, or the thing that you're going through is not something that, thousands of other people haven't dealt with. And hopefully just by saying, hey, reach out to somebody, you can reach out to me if you need to. But just understand that, like, this is human nature. It's very normal for changing your environments. And then also with the Bible study piece, like, I've never tried to hide from guys that, like, that's my foremost priority. If nobody from the military ever, like, if I couldn't post about the military or anything like that, I would still post that stuff because to me, I'm like, the Marine Corps is, is a percentage of my life. It was part of my life, but I never really found my identity in that. I was never that guy that would act like a Marine when I was on, home on leave or whatever. It was very much a job to me, but I love the people, and I still talk to my friends from the military all the time. I love and I miss the people. And so in getting out, I'm like, what's the important part to me when I communicate to guys that are still in? And it's really just grasping that, higher purpose of your whole life is not does not need to be built around your rank or the selection you want to go to or the school you want to go to. Because as I experienced in my career, that stuff is all flimsy. That stuff can all go away very quickly. And sometimes I do believe God takes that away to see where your faith is and to say, what are you putting all your trust in? Is it the name you get from being at this unit? Is it the reputation you get from going on these deployments? Well, what if I take those things away? Then what's left? And sometimes he does that. He strips that from you, and you got to build it back up on, on the rock and not the sand. And so I hope that through that writing and through that platform, I can kind of show guys, like, there's more to life than just this military tactical culture, which is so fickle and will turn on you, in 10 seconds if you say the wrong thing, if you host the wrong people on your show, if you retweet the wrong, it's so fleeting and it's so fickle. But as we know, there is somebody that loves you unconditionally, aside from your reputation in the world and society and all that. So that's my goal, really, is just to show guys, like, there's more to this than just how many followers and how many likes you get. There are things that truly matter eternally, and so hopefully I can get some of that across through the various platforms.
Yeah. And another piece of that I think is not just the connection to God the Father, but also the mission. There is a mission, there's something that is bigger than you that you can be a part of and know that it is a good and perfect mission. It isn't just something that is changing. I think that's another thing that guys I know that have been in really miss that mission focus, even if they get out and find a great career in a business, even in a business that has a direction to it, there still isn't that same kind of I don't know what to really call it, but basically that same level of conviction where everybody is on board with that mission, mission at the cost of life. But in the Christian walk, there is still that mission focus.
Yeah, and I think that's something that it's so important to find a church that thinks that way. As far as encouraging, especially young men, to be like, look, you have kind of your marching orders from God. You have the dominion mandate, the cultural mandate, all these things that, like, God tells you to be a man, go take dominion of the earth through building businesses, building families, building all these things. He's not just telling you to sit in a coffee shop and, hum soft acoustic lyrics all day long. And that's kind of a lot of what I grew up with was, like, you need to essentially lay aside that whole, like, type A masculine energy and just kind of, like, let other people do that. We're just here. It's like very hyper spiritual. Have your quiet time. It's very pietistic. And so I
Did
think
that
guys,
influence you going into the Marines in any way?
I don't know. I mean, my dad was a federal agent growing up. And so like I was surrounded by pretty tough guys that were like down in Southern Florida and South America during the big cocaine days and things like that. So I was surrounded by pretty tough men. And so I'm actually writing an article about this now, but I saw that and I'm like, that is masculinity that inspires me, that like motivates me. Like they're tough guys that are, locking up bad guys and all that kind of stuff. When you're a kid, like cowboys and robbers and all that. I was like, these guys, they have something that I want to emulate when I grow. But then there were times when I felt like going into the Christian world, I was like, these guys are so much different than that. And it's like that's being held up as the epitome of good masculinity when I wouldn't follow that youth pastor around the corner to the gas station. Like he might know all the right answers from the book, but there's no weight or gravity with him. It's just very like silly and goofy. And so that was something that I had to work through that I didn't really like get a grasp on until, years later living on my own, and realizing that, the ideal Christian man is not just a woman with a beard, like a lot of churches treat it as such. Like you need to be quiet and timid and turn the other cheek. And these are all, teachings in the Bible, but they can be misconstrued to mean that you need to be this like docile, timid person that's never confrontational, never sticks up for what you believe in. You're just kind of a doormat. And so I understood that wrongly growing up. So when I started to understand that rightly, especially in a culture that increasingly is against the things that we believe in. Like the church today needs men that are willing to be confrontational, that are willing to boldly say things that are true, even when it, brings harm on them and brings sacrifice. And so that really inspired me to be like, maybe I've been getting this wrong most of my life. This was probably 10 years ago, but I was like, maybe I've been misunderstanding this. And that was kind of like revitalization of my motivation to serve the Lord in that sense, because I said, you know what? He's not telling me that my masculinity is a flaw. It's actually a feature of how he made me. And that kind of changed everything for me. And so when I tell guys that, especially young Marines, a lot of them see the church and they're like, I don't want to go close my eyes and sway around during, as some guy sings. And I'm like, I get that. I'm like, I get that. But you don't have to do that. That's not what God's telling you to do. That might be what the culture around you is telling you to do. Let me tell you what God says about that. Your masculinity is a good thing. The church and the society need that. Obviously, there are probably some things that our culture sees as masculine that need to be laid aside, that actually are toxic, like womanizing and all that kind of stuff. But the way that I grew up thinking about what it means to be a true godly man was kind of a 180 from what it should have been. And thankfully, I had good mentors like my dad and some other Christian men that were like kind of mentoring me through this of like, if you think that's the ideal Christian man, that's completely off. Turn that on its head. Like, use the things that God gave you to serve him. Don't use them for your own gain and, your own acquirement of wealth and women and things like that. Use it to serve the Lord. Build a family, build businesses, work hard, aim those in a positive, productive direction, and serve God through that. So that was a huge change for me. But yeah, in the business world too. I mean, I think a lot of Christians have this idea of, in order to be really spiritual, I just kind of need to be like on staff at a church. I don't know much about business, but like that's not my right. Like that's held up as the ultimate pinnacle of spirituality. But what we don't often tell young men is like the church needs businessmen too. The church needs plumbers. The church needs all kinds of tradesmen.
Oh,
The church needs people to do their accounting. Like, so we need Christians out in all of these areas. There can only be so many pastors at the church. And that's really when I read and researched about this doctrine of like vocation. This idea that you can glorify God just as much through being a good plumber as the pastor does by being a good pastor. Obviously, elders and pastors are worthy of double honor, as the Bible tells us, but that doesn't mean that being a Christian plumber is an inferior occupation to that. You can glorify him just as much through the way that you run your plumbing business or your firearms business, or for me, doing consulting. So that was a really good wake-up call. And I think that that's something that a lot of young guys, it really brings them to life when they hear that. They're like, I'm not a second-rate believer because I'm not sitting in a seminary by a fireside, you know, in a nice sport coat reading theology. There are people that need to do that. That's a good thing. It's good for the church. But it's not very many of them. What do the rest of us do? Well, the good news is, you know, you can serve the Lord just as much by being a great Marine or by, you know, being a great businessman or a great accountant. Anything that God has made you to do, you can glorify him through doing, just like you guys do. I mean, I see you guys, you say, I mean, your Instagram handle, right, is talking about glorifying God through all you do. And that really just gets to the heart of it. No matter what you choose to do, you can glorify God through it if you're working hard and doing it for the right reason.
I was literally just having this conversation over lunch with Colonel Dahl, former, well, I mean, there's no former Marines, but he no longer flies an F-18. So he is now the CEO of T-Rex instead of flying an F-18, slightly different job. But we were just literally talking about this thing. What is the ultimate success for T-Rex? Because, you know, Forbes has a definition of business success that is different than ours. The firearm industry. Well, and there's so many different pieces of the firearm community. The Instagram firearm community has a different definition of success than like the NSSF, SHOT Show, et cetera. But there's so much stuff that we would like to accomplish and just be a good example of that are smaller, more basic things, like being the best employer in Hickman County. In some ways, that's cheating. Nobody else in the firearm industry is employing people in Hickman County right now, so we automatically beat them.
Perfect.
But that
You already
is a
won.
really high goal.
Yeah, and that's I think that a lot of people can't understand that as far as like business is just generally held up as like you want to make millions of dollars, you want to be your own boss, all these things. Nothing wrong with any of those things. But I do think as believers, like we have much different expectations and standards of like you said, what defines success. I try to bring that to military guys as far as like you will probably never be that guy that kills Bin Laden because we don't know who that was because like four different people said they killed Bin Laden. And that one
Yeah,
guy
I think
just
we're
tweets
up to
about it a
like eight
lot.
now, but
Yeah, maybe eight. But what you can be is an amazing husband, an amazing father to your kids. There's a quote that goes around, it gets attributed to like 12 different people, but the only people that will remember you worked late are your kids, which is very true. Sometimes you have to work late. I'm not bashing people that work late. But it's a great point. And with the military, you know, you can stay all night checking emails and getting ready for training and things like that. But you will probably never be a four-star general. You will probably never be that guy that's at that really cool unit that's doing all the stuff you see in the movies. But you do have tasks laid out for you 5 feet in front of your face, like being a husband, being a father, being a leader of Marines. And those things are often more difficult, but they're far more important. And so I think if we can kind of tweak what we see as defining success and the standards of what it means to live a good and godly life, you don't need to make $10 billion to be seen as a success in business. Sometimes it can be just enough to say, I raised my kids, I provided for my family, and I did my best to be a godly man and dad and husband. And I think God is glorified through that more so than, you know, the 100-hour work weeks where we're just trying to make $10,000 more this month.
So, quick question about, well, let's not get into business quite yet, but I have a question for you. When you got out of the military, did you have a good church that you were a part of at the time, or had you moved around so much that you were kind of starting that from scratch as well?
Yeah, that's the hard part, you know, with and military guys can attest to this. It's just tough because by the time you really get involved in a church, you're pretty much up for orders and moving again. So we had a good church in Camp Lejeune, outside of Lejeune in Jacksonville, Harvest Presbyterian that we liked a lot. So we moved there. We spent some time in Kansas City, Missouri, just a short time for about a year, and had an amazing church there, and just fit right in. And it was incredible. Very small kind of country church, which we've come to love now. But you know, it just takes time. It takes time, especially in these churches where we are used to being in military towns where the elders is really just anybody that's been there more than a few years. 'Cause they're like, hey, you live here, but you're not moving in 2 years. if you're like a reputable person, you're going to serve as an elder because we have five people that are like permanent members. And most of them, they're great men, but it's just kind of a funny joke about like there's no longevity in these churches. And so, contrast that with going to Kansas City. We're in this church where there were third and fourth generation families in this church. You'd see kids sitting with their parents and grandparents, which is amazing. But it was kind of an aspect we had never really seen growing up in mega churches and going to military churches. You don't see kids sitting with their great grandparents in the same pews where they were all baptized, singing the same hymns that their grandparents sang. So that was really neat. It was cool for my kids to see, like, Christianity is a generational faith. And, Lord willing, my kids will be in my church now with their grandkids someday. That's the goal. We pray for that all the time. But it's definitely a different dynamic when you get into a place where you think to yourself, okay, we're going to be here possibly for the rest of our lives. And we're going to be with these same people until they die or we die. That could be 70 years. And I think that's really the way churches were meant to live together. And the community of faith was meant to live together. There's a lot of almost all the biblical commandments are about community and, interacting with one another and families interacting with one another. And so it's a beautiful thing. It can take some adjustment for people that are used to kind of being, and I don't say this pejoratively, but like used to being sort of shallow. Like you go for a couple of years, but you don't really know anyone that well. You're just there, you're worshiping together, you kind of know each other, and then you leave. But when you really go deeper, it can be awkward at first, but man, it has been amazing for us. The church we go to now was built mid-1800s, and the people that built it, their family's still in the church. And there's old pictures from way back in the day all over the wall. So all the kids now at that church, like they know where they came from. They know their great grandparents were strong believers, just as their grandparents and parents and they are. So it's like seeing that legacy passed down has been super encouraging for us. And I think that can be one of the beautiful things about jumping off the train of moving every 3 years and kind of settling down and putting down some roots.
The other thing is, as I've talked to guys who have left the military, the main thing that they're missing seems to be either mission or the camaraderie, that group of guys that they've shared misery and shared success with. And that is something that I do think that the church largely gave people a sense of identity and community. And so I'm thinking back to World War II vets that I know. I'm sure you have talked. Have you read the Sebastian Junger book, Tribe? It's much talked about. One of the things that he mentioned is, of course, World War II generation. Those guys left, fought World War II, came back generally to the same towns, the same communities, and people were much more churched back then. So they plugged back into the same churches. They plugged back into the same groups of people that they were a part of. And it's not the same as your foxhole buddy. But when you put decades into, knowing somebody in a small town, you do have a level of camaraderie. And so that is something that I feel like our generation and the next generation is at a bit of a disadvantage, like ill-suited to come out of the military where there are strong bonds of camaraderie and there are missions to undertake back to a world that doesn't generally have those things.
Well, and that's another issue I see with Instagram, for all of its benefits. I appreciate that I can interact with people from all over the world. But a lot of guys, when they come out of that environment of being with their friends, they come back, and a lot of them are from the Midwest, from some random town that there might be one other guy that served in the Marines, but he's like a Vietnam vet. And so what do? They go to their phones. And so they're like, I got to find people who think like me and can relate. And I think it's well-intentioned. Like, I don't think there's anything malicious about it, but they're like, I don't think like these people that I grew up with anymore. My mind has changed. I have changed. I have more life experience. I need to find people that were just like the ones that I've been with for the last few years. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I think it used to be like, I'm going to join, we laugh about the VFW, the old guys drinking beer and playing cornhole at the VFW. But like that used to be the thing. Like you'd go to the VFW or you'd go to like a VA group or you'd go to something to find people that you were, that you're compatible with. Now you get on, you might comment on a meme page or be in a group chat online or Discord server or whatever. And those are not bad things in themselves. But I think people are starting to see that that's not enough. Like online digital relationships will never satisfy you. And that's kind of a hard talk I've had to have with a couple guys that it's a hard line because I always want to be here to talk to people and try to give them some give them encouragement and say, hey, I know, I understand what you're going through. It's not easy. You're not alone. But at the same time, I am not a substitute for your pastor or your dad or your mentor or any of that. Like I can tell you what I believe and what I think will help you today. But like, if this keeps going, you have to find somebody in person. You have to find a group of people that you can go sit and have a drink or a coffee with and just get to know at a deep level. Because the phone thing, I mean, it makes you feel like you're in community, but you're only ever what, like one phone outage away from not having those people. It's not real.
For sure. Yeah.
And so I just think that's
Yeah.
so important. Like, and I read a study recently about you can tell when somebody, I'll go back to the study in a sec, but you can tell when somebody is so connected on their phone all the time that they kind of have that zombie face of like the real world seems less real than the online world does. And it's certainly less satisfying. And so when you get those dopamine hits of likes and follows and DMs and all that stuff, just like drugs, it eventually becomes harder to reach that satisfaction level. And so you need more and more and more. So you end up just doom scrolling for hours and hours and hours. And you can never get back to that level that it was at first. So you just keep getting more and more, just like drugs. And I think that extends also to the relationship piece. Sometimes digital communication becomes preferable to in person. Like, how many people are anxious to answer the phone? How many people are anxious to link up one-on-one? And I mean, I have some of that. Like, I get that. I grew up mostly in
Oh,
a
I
digital
yeah.
age with email, and I'd rather so much rather email somebody. But some of the old timers at work will just call me. Like when somebody cold calls you from work, you're like, are you okay? Like, is there an emergency?
Is
And they're
there a
like, no, I just had
desperate
a, I just,
emergency here?
yeah. They're like, I just had a question for you. And you're like, this is so weird. But I think that lends itself to like, we prefer the type of communication where you can polish yourself. You can think for 10 minutes about how you're going to reply. You can be who you want to be online. Whereas in person, there's going to be awkward slip-ups. There's going to be times you don't know what to say. It's a lot harder to be who you are in reality than it is to be whatever persona you are online. And so that's one that I know a lot of guys are struggling with because some of these guys pour out their hearts and their lives to me in the DMs, and I feel for them. A lot of these guys don't have, biblically, they call it shepherds. They don't have mentors and pastors, and a lot of them didn't have dads and don't have dads. But at the end of the day, I try to lovingly tell them, like, this is not, this might feel good now. I might give you a piece of encouragement now, but this is not sustainable. This is a short-term solution to something that, can only be satisfied in real life, in physical presence.
And I think that there's a bunch of different aspects to that. I think you've touched on a lot of them, but a key one is that ability to polish yourself. I think that is huge. That's part of the reason that I would love to think about the answer to a question and put it in an email, as opposed to trip over my words for a while trying to figure out what it is that I actually want to say. I think that one's key. But there's another aspect, which is I think the internet has spoiled us so that we can get super specific. Like I can pick the internet meme lord that most has my own sense of humor and my personal like media watching history. Like I want a meme lord who gives me Indiana Jones references, not Ghostbusters references. Like in the past, the funny kid in your class would be the funny kid in your class. And now you can be like, no, I don't want to hang out with the guy on my street because he likes a different anime, like a different version of the animated version of the manga that I like. I'm going to go to the forum or the Facebook group or the whatever social media group where I like the guys who like the exact same episodes of the exact same version of the exact same anime that I like. And
That is so
we'll
true,
ignore
man.
the rest of the fandom. Yeah.
That's
You can
such a
be
good
so
point.
specific now.
That's such a good
Yeah.
point. My wife and I the other day were talking about back in the day, like if you grew up outside of a major city, even in the suburbs, how many people got married to a kid that lived on their street? They're just like, oh yeah, marry down the street. Like we grew up together and then we got married. Now you have 10,000 women on your phone at all times. So you might meet a girl in real life who's like, she fits every requirement I have for a wife. She'd be perfect. But you're always like, what if? What if there's somebody else out there?
I
And
am
I think
so glad that I narrowly missed that time. Like I am old
Oh, me too.
enough
Me too.
that I was old-fashioned enough that I was like, psh, I don't want to do that. It feels weird. Because that would have been bad for me.
We got married. We got married in 2013. So I don't know when Tinder came out, but like it was not a big deal when we were dating. And it really does feel like we narrowly missed that. Because we never had to deal with that. So that's another piece. Guys ask, because I do push on marriage and family a lot. I'm not saying everyone needs to do it. Like, I'm not saying that. I try to share with guys that it is an incredibly fulfilling thing. And it's the thing that brings me the most joy in life. And I believe that, you know, as a norm, that's what men are called to take a wife and have a family and whatever. But guys, it's hard. I'm very sympathetic to it because guys respond and they're like, how do I find a godly wife that I can trust in today's day and age? And I'm like, dude, I'm not the guy for the how now because I met my wife in person at church in college. She was there to see her cousin do something. So she was randomly there one day and we met in person. We talked in person. We didn't exchange texts before we met in person, all that kind of stuff. I mean, texting was around and we'd talk or whatever late into the night and all that. But like, we were not on an app. I didn't find her on an app. So these days, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And I can empathize with these guys about it's got to be really, really hard, man. So I feel for them.
So my wife and I did have a long distance relationship, but we met each other and would see each other at conferences once or twice a year for like 9 years before we started being more deliberate. So yeah, it takes time, and I'm really glad that I'm really glad that we both of us kind of, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I can tell you for a fact that I would have analysis paralysis if I was weighing 10,000 applicants as opposed to the half a dozen people that I have known and liked over the last many decades.
Yeah. Well, I think you nailed it there with the paralysis or now let's see, paralysis by analysis. I think that applies to everything these days. Look at any Reddit thread and it's like, is my workout program is the exact number of reps and sets and the exact brand of whey protein I'm drinking afterwards and the exact creatine monohydrate I'm taking. Like, are all of these things the perfect ones or should I be doing something else? And you're like, dude, just go do something. Just go lift some weights. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. And so like, there's a story about my brother's father-in-law tells a story about his dad. So like World War II era. He went to the Navy recruiter because he's like, I want to, you know, everybody else is going to fight. I want to go fight too. The Navy recruiter is down the street. He's like, I want to sign up for the Navy. And they're like, you got to wait 30 minutes because we got a big line. All these boys want to sign up. Well, he's like, I didn't want to wait 30 minutes. I had to go back to work. So he went across the street and joined the Air Force or the Army Air Corps, whatever it was at the time. And just that always stood out to me as like when you didn't have a lot of information, you just acted. And sometimes it didn't work out for the best in the short term. That's true, but you make it work. You make it work. You know, you might meet a girl that you're like, wow, she could be my wife someday back then. But if you didn't have the internet and you couldn't ask strangers on Reddit or Instagram about it, you make the best decision with the information that you have. And so I think there is, I'm very much an over researcher. So at some point I have to say, stop Googling this, stop Googling the exact phrase that you want to be true so that other people will validate, you know, what you want to be the case and just make a decision and live with it. And that's something that I think is really hard today because you have so many sources of information coming in. You know, we joke about it with high schoolers. Should I join the Navy and be a SEAL? Or should I join the Marines and be this? And you're like, dude, just pick one and work after it, you know, with all your strength. Just go for it. But the constantly sitting around hemming and hawing about it, like that's not going to get you anywhere.
And one of the things I'm again going to blame the internet because apparently I am getting older and grumpier all the time. Again, I will blame the internet. The internet is so good at bringing us the cream of the crop that I have really high standards for stuff like this podcast. The internet is showing me people who are amazing podcasters all the time and have amazing cameras and amazing lighting and amazing audio to the point where I no longer have basic standards for whatever skill sets I'm familiar with based on who I know. I literally am presented with the best possible versions of ukulele playing Asian kids on Instagram all the time. So I know that it's an unreachable bar at this point. Just picking a thing to do is really hard. And that's a great thing that I think that my kids are really good for this, for me. Where it's like, you know what? My kids are going to be amazed if I learn how to play the guitar terribly. So yeah. I'm not promising on this podcast that I am going to learn how to play the guitar on my fifth attempt, but we'll see.
That's a great point. Nothing makes you feel stronger than when you're lifting like a tiny little weight in the gym and your kids watch and they're just like, just in awe of how strong you are. It's like, it's the best, man. Nothing better.
It's getting to the point where I can't do it with all of them anymore. So yeah, actually I will say, I don't think I've mentioned this anywhere else on social media, but I would like for this podcast, the one that you were on, to be the one where I'm saying, baby number five is coming pretty soon. So
nice, man! Congratulations.
Yeah, my ability to do the push-ups with everybody is kind of doomed.
Now, was it the shadowy quiverful movement that really forced your hand in that?
No, it's just I think biology, basic biology, just an ability to read Psalm 127 without being commanded to by a cult leader. I think that's what it was. Yeah. Also, Preach. You know what?
I thought it was some
kids are amazing.
Yeah, I agree. They are. So. I thought it was some puppet master saying it was time for you to have your fifth, based on what I've heard. But it's good to know.
No, this is. I know the rumors are going around. I'm surprised that you don't get enough people. So this is something that I do want to talk to somebody about at some point. I do find cults, real actual cults, interesting and fascinating. And as time goes on and the internet keeps happening and clown world is on the rise, a better understanding of actual cults is a really important and useful, helpful thing, I think, to discuss. So I'd love to talk to somebody that knows more about it. But I also think it's kind of hilarious how that is a word that has kind of lost a lot of its pejorative meaning thanks to the internet. And the number of people who are like, yeah, I'm part of the T-Rex cult. It's like, no, they were trying to be really negative. They're like, no, it's awesome. I'm part of the T-Rex cult. I have two holsters and I'm getting body armor. It's like, guys, this is not how the internet is supposed to work.
Yeah, that's a, if you ever heard the podcast Cultish, they're pretty good. They have some pretty good episodes about.
Yes.
They go pretty in depth.
Yes. Yeah. No, I know some of those guys and I appreciate some of their stuff. There's nothing about them that I have heard that I haven't appreciated. I have such a limited amount of time for podcasts these days that there are a lot of times when I have thought to myself, I should listen to this podcast because it sounds amazing. Or maybe I should just see if they would like to come on my podcast because I have to create this content one way or the other, and I'll just ask them, you know, what I was curious about so I can skip a couple episodes.
There you go.
Which is not my motivation with you. I read your Substack. I consume the memes with enjoyment, and I just wanted to, you know, hang out virtually. And I thought that this would be a blessing and a benefit to folks listening to the podcast. On the meme side, I could ask a dumb Norm MacDonald joke, like, where do you get your ideas? But I will instead ask a real question. What is your funniest meme? Like, which of your memes make you laugh as you create them?
The ones that make me laugh get, like, the least amount of engagement, which is okay. It doesn't bother me at all. I really like the super niche ones that, like, four people understand. And then other people will like it and stuff just because they think it's funny that they don't get it and they understand it's very niche. But I don't know. I like some of my ones from like the first few weeks I started the page because I was so unhinged and had no concern for quality of production. that it was like a Google image photo, my font. Like I just picked the first font that Instagram came up with, and we were making fun of the Camp Lejeune wives because it had snowed, like a half inch of snow in North Carolina. And I looked on the Camp Lejeune Facebook page, and all these wives are like blowing. The PAO made a post, the public affairs officer made a post, and it was like this, this side of base is closed until the snow gets plowed or something like that. And like it had in 5 minutes, it had like 180 comments, and I was like, what? These have to be like bots or something. And I go on there, and it's all these wives that are like asking incredibly specific questions about like, is my husband's transition readiness seminar class canceled at building, like whatever? Is my son's JROTC? And I'm like, the Camp Lejeune PAO is not going to know this stuff. But the meme we made, and I had like two really good friends back then, and I still send them stuff just to see if they think it's funny. I sent it to them, and they were like, just start a page. We're tired of you texting us. So I kind of started it randomly off that. But just kind of laughing about the things that happen on base that you're like, anywhere else in the world, this would just be insane. It's just insanity. But you're in this little microcosm of people that your whole life is, within 10 square miles of each other. So if you don't laugh, you'll cry, I guess.
I don't have the insider knowledge to understand why all of your memes are funny, but I do understand, I do understand comedic timing and the vocabulary that you're using well enough to think a lot of that stuff is hilarious. But some of the specific ones, I'm like, this is obviously about somebody.
I'll be like laughing in bed, making something, or just thinking about something. And I'll show my wife, be like, what are you laughing about? And I'll show her nothing, completely straight face. She's like, I don't understand a word of what you're saying. But she still
I
supports
think
me.
the
She still.
only, yeah, I think the only military comedy that Heidi thinks is funny is Mandatory Fun Day.
Oh, yeah, he's really funny. He, uh,
I think it might just be
he's.
him. Like, I don't know that we're laughing at the jokes or if she's laughing at him. I think his jokes are hysterical,
Me
as
too.
well
He's
as his
great, man.
delivery.
His delivery's amazing. He's got the prior enlisted kind of salty old officer thing going. And I like that he makes family jokes too. Like his one about when people say, I'm sorry, when he seizes him with four daughters. Dude, it just killed me.
They can all speak English. They
Yeah,
can
he's
hear you
awesome, man.
talking. Yes. Yeah.
He was on Good Morning America, I think.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they interviewed him, which is awesome. I think he deserves it.
Has there been a change? Because I have only sort of been tied into what's going on in the political military side on occasion. Has there been a change when it comes to how guys are allowed to speak? And that used to be a massively complex, almost never allowed process. Has that been loosened up a little bit?
Yeah, I think now, I mean, I've been out a few years, but I had the account my last 2 years. And I think as long as you are not calling out like specific people, like by name, I think it's generally okay. Or not just, kind of being an idiot. Like if you're joking about general themes, I think it's not a big deal. I wouldn't put my first and last name attached to it. That's while I was still in uniform. That's for sure. Some guys do. I'm like, hey, that's, can if you want, but I would just probably won't want that drama. But I think
If you had been
generally,
invited on to Good Morning America instead of the T-Rex podcast,
whew.
you would have probably had to go through a whole bunch of permissions.
Yeah, I'm trying to get on The View, but they haven't invited me yet, so we'll see.
If you get on The View, I dare you to just full Norm Macdonald it. I think it would be amazing. So,
Yeah, I will. Once I get my invite, I'll let you guys know. But yeah,
Fantastic.
I think guys have to be more careful now because it is more prevalent. Like I said, when I started this, it was like the golden age of people just making really stupid posts about all kinds of stuff. And some guys that don't really have emotional intelligence would just go like way too far. And I mean, there have been like witch hunts for guys. There's a couple of like
Oh,
soft
yeah.
units where they're like, we need to find this guy. And I don't think most of them don't, but if they do, man, I think they can get them in trouble. But hopefully military units have better things to do.
You would think. So another guy that I read on Substack is Commander Salamander, who has the podcast Midrats. And he had an article a few weeks ago talking about some of the new vocab guidelines for the Navy. You're not allowed to mention Islamic extremism and different word stuff. And he's like, guys, we just spent 20 years and trillions of dollars, and now we can't talk about who we were looking for? Like, is this... So it is interesting to me when... Now it's sort of coming full circle. When the most spiciest memes and the most serious articles are once again two sides of the same coin, talking about the same stuff, addressing the same issues. When that happens, that's a kind of an interesting time in a specific moment in history or culture.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, I don't know if you ever read Duffel Blog back in the day. It's kind of like The Onion, but military related. Mm-hmm. And as time went on, I think they're still around. I don't think they post quite as much, but back in their heyday, they were pumping out articles. And kind of like The Onion or Babylon Bee or whatever, as time went on, the Duffel Blog articles started seeming really realistic, even though they're meant to be satire. And now, I don't know if they create less now because it's like they're having a hard time finding material that's actually satire because things are so crazy. But it's true. I think, like we said before, a lot of times if you don't laugh, you'll cry. A lot of times the things that are happening, the best way you can capture it is just make it something to laugh about. But I do feel for the guys that have to live with a lot of that every day. Especially, I'm sure you've seen a lot of, it's not even just political stuff. A lot of it's like living conditions and being stranded on some base in Africa without any communication, things like that. That's the kind of stuff that like, guys can deal with the political stuff, you know. A lot of, if you have good small unit leadership, you're kind of, you see all that and it frustrates you, but it's not like your everyday reality. But the living condition stuff and the lack of communication on deployments to families, that kind of stuff, I really feel for guys on that because that can really ruin, that can ruin things on the home front and really do a lot of damage. So probably that's the kind of thing that would need a little more serious attention. And there are accounts that do that, and I appreciate them. But yeah, you get the whole range of things, man.
So I have a sort of a deeper theological question for you. And not necessarily theological, but it'll probably go there. So a guy comes to you asking for advice, and people have emailed T-Rex about this, even though the four owners of T-Rex are not prior military. There's a bunch of people that are prior military at T-Rex, so we may not be a bad place to come. But they ask how they should transition out, what are the things they should do as they're getting into the private sector. What do you recommend? Let's say this guy's not a Christian. Do you tell him to go plug into a church? What do you tell some of these guys? Because we've talked very glowingly about the importance of church community and finding your identity and your, you know, new squad mates and mission there. What about guys who are not Christians? Is church still that third place for them?
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that it would be, and I would definitely plug that of like, hey, I know, you know, if they tell me I'm not a Christian, I'm not a believer, I'm like, okay, I would recommend, I just want to let you know, because it's important to me and it's been huge to me. This can be a great avenue for you. And I hope it is. Like, I'm not neutral about it. I hope that you take this to heart and find a church. And if I can help you work through that in the initial stages, like, I would give guys my phone number. Like, that kind of stuff is worth a phone call. And not just a faceless DM. Like, if someone's like open to it, I'm like, dude, give me a call. Let's talk through it. And I'm never going to be like, you have to believe this. You have to believe this. I hope they do, but I can just give them the material. I can't make them believe. Right. So we got to pray that God would move in them. But I think part of being a good steward of my resources too, is to answer that question. So after I'd hit that about, you know, I hope you believe these things. I hope you find a good church that believes the Bible. Let's talk about the business side. And there's such a vast range of backgrounds and experiences. I mean, I know guys, most officers go to grad school, enlisted guys, it's a wide range of, you know, going to college using GI Bill, going to the trades, doing any number of things. So it's really hard for me to like give good advice in a small amount of time. So I don't think I can always do that with the platforms that I have. So I'll be like, I'll tell guys, you can shoot me an email, I'll look over your resume, but like, you need to find somebody that's more of a long-term mentor in this field. But I'd say the biggest advice that I give to guys is like, find something that will be fulfilling for you. Don't just find the first thing that will allow you to get out. I think there are a lot of well-intentioned kind of public figures out there that transition is their shtick, like that's their thing. But I do think a lot of the advice that gets put out on LinkedIn or whatever, it's more about the person posting it than it is about the reader. So they'll tell their stories of, here's what I did, here's what I did. And then they get into a job that what they did just isn't replicable. And I think those things can be valuable just to add, to your toolbox or whatever. But I don't think that that is like on a large scale very helpful for a lot of guys getting out. And then I think also we sort of oversell the veteran piece. So I've been on hiring committees for three or four roles where I'm at now in the last couple of years just to add to our team. And we've turned down, I don't think we've hired, besides me, I don't know that we've hired another veteran in the last few years, and we've had a few apply. And that's not to say that it's not important, but it's just one piece. It's one qualification that can help add to others. But what I tell guys getting out is like, think about if you were to apply and there was no evidence of military on your resume, would you still be marketable? And a lot of them, I mean, justifiably, the answer is no. They've been busy for years. They've been all over the world deploying or stationed overseas or just busy. You don't have a lot of time at the end of the day as a Lance Corporal in the Marines. No other jobs make you clean your room at night. Like you have time elsewhere to go do things. You don't have that in the military most places. So a lot of times I'll recommend like take a couple years, use the benefits that you have to get those certifications, whether that's a college degree, whether that's going to grad school. It's not a one size fits all, but get those things that could stand on their own and don't rely on your veteran status to get you that job. Because in most cases, unless there's like a very specific veteran transition program at certain companies, which they have, you have SkillBridge where you can go do like an internship, and then a lot of times that leads to a job. There are certain programs that have that. But outside of that, veteran status is really kind of a check in the box from what I've seen. And you're going to need more than that to stand out. And so that's my biggest encouragement to guys is like, go get that real experience that applies to that industry. Because I think what we were told, when I was a young officer, we were kind of told that we were in such high demand in the civilian world. I'm here to tell you that is not the case. Especially with the hiring, not a hiring freeze, but like with the job situation right now, companies are not begging for junior officers or Marines to get out just so they can pay them a bunch of money to be like vague general leadership experts. They have 65-year-old business leaders that do that. They don't need us. And so all the ones that I know that have gotten into roles that they really wanted after the service, they had something else to add to that. And that's not to discourage guys, because the beauty of it is that we have so many benefits to use to get those certifications and to get those things on our resume, that'll help us get in the door there. I've always said for vets, if you can get in the door for an interview, because a lot of it's just algorithms now, I'm sure running a business, like a lot of it's just algorithms. So if you have nothing that relates to that job, except I was a Marine, you're not even going to get past the computer round. Like you're not even going to get a face to face. But what I've seen with vets is like, if you can get past that, if you can get enough on your resume to get past that first round and get face to face, you do really well because you know how to talk to people, you know how to dress, you hold yourself with confidence, you carry yourself well. But I think it's just that first part that a lot of us get misled on. The transition services on base, man, they are outdated and they do their best and they really try. But they'll tell you, walk up to the hiring manager and hand them a hard copy of your resume. You're like, dude, we haven't done that, in 30 years, 25 years. So a lot of it's outdated, even if it's, well-intentioned. And a lot of it's run by guys that have never had a private sector job. And so they're kind of teaching what they haven't been through. And so my last point on this is don't discount the advice. And we sort of talked on this, Isaac, but don't discount the advice of non-veterans. We do not know it all. We actually know very little. And part of being a wise and adaptable person is realizing what you don't know. And so when you're trying to go into the civilian world, recognize that even if someone's younger than you or less experienced than you, like in life experience, they might be experts in the field you're trying to go into. And so it's really important to set your pride aside and say, this person might not have been in the Marines, this person might not have served in the military, but that's okay. They've been excellent in their own field in different ways, and they're not, less worthy of our respect. They're actually just as worthy of our respect. They've just chosen a different path in life, one that oftentimes is just as important, just as valuable to society. And I found that the vets that are able to kind of put their pride and their ego aside and get advice from those people that they might not see as, having as much life experience or whatever, they've been the most successful because they say, I'm coming into your world now. Show me what I need to know, mentor me. And I think that's a good, at least a good place to start.
You mentioned as well just being in the military and being out of civilian life for a little while does give you kind of it does in fact it does indeed give you some fascinating useful skills, interpersonal skills, leadership skills. You are in touch with real life in a way that guys your age who are not in the military very likely aren't. But at the same time, you are almost in a little bit of a time capsule for 4, 6, 8 years, whatever your career is. And so things will have changed by the time you get out. I was not in the military, but I did live in New Zealand for almost 8 years. And when I moved back to the States, things had changed pretty drastically. And so yeah, it was an interesting thing that gave me maybe a little bit of perspective. When you come back into the civilian world, yeah, there are going to be some things that your time capsule has made you good at, like avoiding specific damaging trends. But then there's also some stuff that you're going to have to figure out and learn. So yeah.
Yeah, like you said, I think guys that go into the military, you gain some really good things, and you gain a lot of awareness of the world and how different people live. You learn discipline and self-respect and how you dress and your appearance and things like that. But one thing that does not translate is that when you get to the business, a lot of guys get out and want to go business. The business world is about money. The government is so bad with money. So like, there's no talk about
Yes.
profits or, profit and loss or any of that kind of stuff.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but all the leadership stuff that you learned that is excellent and so good, and a lot of the logistics stuff that is solid is counterbalanced by some appallingly unfree market, unentrepreneurial stuff, unlimited budgets, and so on and so forth. Yeah.
And that can be tough at first because you're thinking according to a different metric and according to a different standard. And if you run out of money, there's not always money left over to figure it out. We call it the OPM fund, other people's money in the government. You can always find more of other people's money, and it's super jacked up to say that, but it's true. I've found, in the corporate world, that can jeopardize your job. If you misuse funds, it's not just like, oh, we'll just kind of reallocate, you messed up this, and this. That can cost you your job because that's people's livelihood. It's not just a bottomless fund. But on the flip side, it can be very freeing as well because you have very clear expectations and metrics to kind of measure your performance by. Because you can look at the numbers, don't lie. A lot of times in the military, when you're getting evaluated, you're like, this is kind of arbitrary depending on what my boss thinks of me. If you're in the business world, especially like on the finance side or whatever, you have a very clear expectations of how you're supposed to perform. And it's not always just money. Sometimes it can be other things too. But I found it to be sort of comforting in the sense that I feel like my mission is more clear at work. I'm not just trying to satisfy a boss that's kind of like moody and I don't really understand, if he likes me, if he doesn't like me. My whole career kind of depends on how he evaluates me. There's some of that in the corporate world, but it's much more results and performance based. And that comes with your compensation too. That's one of the big complaints about the government is that no matter how hard you work, you're getting paid the same as a guy that does nothing and might just be waiting to get kicked out. The corporate world, like if you kick butt for years and years, you can get promoted, you can get raises. There's a lot of money to be had or benefits to be had, if that's something you want to chase, and your good performance will be rewarded in most cases. So that is one of the plus sides that I think high performers and hard chargers in the military will really appreciate and be happy about when they make the switch.
Well, Is there anything in particular that you would like to touch on, cover, close with? Anything that we, that, I mean, any questions you have for me or stuff that you, I mean, this isn't just an interview. This is also, you know, supposed to be kind of conversational. So,
yeah, I would just be curious to know, what are some of the big things you've learned? Because I really like business, learning about business stuff now in a way that I didn't think I would. This, you know, this side of social media and stuff, like, that's hardly a business. I do some merch and stuff, but I really have fun with it on a very small scale. But I don't really do it for the money. I make plenty of money in my job. I really do it for fun. And it's a way to stay connected to guys with, like, physical things, you know. But I found that enjoyable. And it's kind of made me research and learn more about the business side of things. So I'd be curious to know, in your opinion, what are some lessons you've learned along the way? Like, maybe your top two. Just having been in this family business for a while.
So the first, well, and I would say I'm kind of similar. I used to be involved in freelance video production, and I would do commercial video for companies. So I'd always have a window into companies, but I would also kind of look down my nose and I'm like, ah, the business world, those corporate guys, I have no interest in that. Well, once you're involved in more of the business than just billing for services, I actually find it really fascinating and interesting. I really enjoyed pivoting a little bit into engineering and product design. And I also really enjoyed the business side of it and getting a better handle on the economics. And I would say that a lot of the stuff that I have learned that has been interesting might be specifically interesting to me and not super useful to other people, but just the big effect that tiny things can have. And some of this is, you know, T-Rex and manufacturing specific, like saving a couple of seconds on one particular station in a production line turns into hours and hours and hours saved in a real short amount of time if your volume is high enough. But in that same way, there are, you know, non-manufacturing processes where doing get your order of operations wrong and you are far less efficient than you could be if you did stuff in the right order and did stuff relatively efficiently. Like, even stuff, and I'll bet you and your kids are noticing this as you pack up merch and send it out. Being organized and efficient is the sort of thing that you may not notice that it's lacking if you have a non-repeatable task like commercial video production. But being organized and efficient has massive dividends once you're doing the same thing three or four times. And I didn't really learn that until we were doing things hundreds and thousands of times. Then I was like, ah, yes. So when it comes to things like the efficiency of making stuff or packaging stuff, it's huge. But also when it comes to things like just thinking about business stuff, knowing that there's orders of operations for when money comes in and what money does and when money goes out, and even just figuring out stuff like, I don't know exactly how your business works, but you're buying stuff, you're selling stuff, and there's a bunch of taxes in the middle. When you figure out how to sell more money, you're also going to be paying, you know, or when you figure out how to sell more product and make more money, you're also going to be paying more taxes. But if you figure out how to save money, that's all pure profit. When you're saving money after taxes, like, there's little things like that where you can find new efficiencies once you have a better understanding of how the whole puzzle is working. And so that is one of my new kind of takeaways whenever I'm learning a new thing or thinking about a new aspect of business or a new silo, is like really try to figure out that whole puzzle, because there's going to be a piece here or a piece there where a small thing has a big effect. And ultimately, business is really easy. It's kind of like connecting a battery to a light. Like, if you just connect the battery to the light, it will light up. If you connect people who want product to product, they will give you money. It's really straightforward. But all the little pieces in between are where you get the difference between a really efficient business that generates a lot of money and a lot of light, as opposed to something where, boy, these are the wrong wires and this battery and this bulb are powerful and they're doing next to nothing because of something in the middle needs to be optimized.
Yeah, it's given me a lot more respect for the business world, because the business is the same. Like you said, you have demand and then you supply and they buy it from you and give you money. But the shift in getting that product before people, you know, it used to be when we were kids, you'd go to the mall, you'd buy stuff from the mall. Now it's like I can't click on two tabs online without seeing e-commerce marketing or online
Yep.
marketing, digital, like that is the name of the game. And there are, it's almost like the paralysis by analysis thing. There are so many options and so many different ways to get attention. It really is like, it's almost like a new craft that you have to master. Even if the business is the same, the way to get that product in front of people, it's like it reinvents itself every 20 years.
And it feels like the pendulum swings back and forth too. If you look at marketing from the past, you will, I used to laugh at how ridiculously on the nose some of the old marketing was. Like you'd watch an old TV show or listen to an old radio show, and it was like, this radio show is brought to you by this frozen food. Buy this frozen food. It's delicious and it's wonderful, and it's bringing you this radio show. Well, modern Instagram influencers are the exact same way. They're like, I just got out of the shower and this is the greatest shampoo that I have ever used. And I'm going to talk about nothing else in this entire reel except shampoo that I use. This shampoo is the one that I use, and they say the name 10 times. So sometimes, the pendulum swings toward really subtle advertising that just sells you an idea and then puts the word Coca-Cola in your head. And then it swings the other way and it's just incredibly on the nose, and customers are like, man, I like being told which product they're telling me about. I appreciate the honesty. So I do feel like it's a pendulum that goes back and forth and back and forth. And some of it's driven by culture and some of it's driven by, the new technologies where ads can be so insanely targeted at this point. That is a new thing with ramifications that we probably have yet to fully figure out.
Seems like you guys have got it down on the video side, though. So I would imagine you produce all the videos for the YouTube channel.
So we have a media team. That we have a marketing director and a bunch of media guys, and they have done a really good job. Lucas is kind of the branding guy, and while I did a bunch of video stuff at the beginning with Lucas, I mean, everything that he did on Instagram was totally him and his thing. And then as we rolled into YouTube, I started to get back into doing video, which I hadn't done in a while. He has really mastered the kind of at the beginning of T-Rex, I think it was right when gun stuff was just sort of starting to take off on Instagram. Instagram was still pretty new, still pretty fresh, and they were still kind of okay with guns. And so he picked the perfect platform and he started making the perfect content for that. So he's been really good at anticipating some of these moves that have happened culturally and platform-wise. And the downside to where we are in gun space is obviously there's a lot of there is a lot of pressure from different entities, banks, and a lot of it is in the private sector. But on the internet, we do try to do targeted ads through Facebook and Google, and it's just a completely arbitrary thing as to whether those get pulled because guns. Even if there's no gun in the picture, it's just a picture of a holster. Sometimes it triggers an algorithm, sometimes a human doesn't like it, but it's just very arbitrary how that kind of works. So it forces gun companies in some way. I do think that as stuff changes, and who knows, maybe Google just fails as a company in the future. In some ways, I feel like the companies that have had the harder road will have more resiliency built in, and it might be some of the gun companies that can actually handle working around some of these things. I know of companies, they've totally nailed the targeted advertising, and they now have no plan B whatsoever. So if ever Facebook stopped being the replacement for finding local businesses, I don't know what some of these companies would do. And even some giant companies, if Google AdWords stopped working, I don't know if they would come up with a solution fast enough to survive as a company, because margins are thinner nowadays too.
You guys can go around and stuff some pamphlets in mailboxes.
Yeah, that's always an option. So one of the things that we are hoping to do more of is work on some plan B and plan C stuff marketing wise, because there's no getting around it. We exist as a company. In a brick and mortar in the middle of Centerville, Tennessee. But we exist as a online retailer pretty much at the good pleasure of Google and Meta. There's no escaping that fact. We have worked on other stuff. This podcast is very easily switched and self-hosted, and then our email newsletter is growing and extremely loyal and responsive. So we do have some small Plan B and Plan C stuff, but they're not as big as Plan A currently is. We don't have the kind of reach that YouTube does anywhere else.
Yeah, man. Well, hopefully they keep being nice to you, because I enjoy your guys' stuff, man. It's fun to watch. Like you said, I'm not a big gun guy. I could probably take lessons from all of you, but it is I know a lot of guys that have kind of gone from the ground up just watching instructional videos and things like that. And I do think the more of that content out in the public space, the better. Just personally, selfishly, I wish that's all YouTube was, because I think, like you said, the fact that it's even controversial in the United States of America is kind of a shame.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This one is just, I have enjoyed your stuff and wanted to hang out and spend some time. But I also think that you do a great job of meeting needs and helping people with a kind of content that a lot of people have reached out and asked us for. So hopefully people will appreciate the conversation that we've had and go check out your stuff. So I'm going to put links in the show notes to Lance Captain, the Substack, and then also the Instagram. Do you post your memes anywhere besides Instagram?
No, I've considered doing an email list, but I still got to work on that. I'm not okay. The most savvy outside of social media, but I might start doing a Substack.
I will say, Twitter is as spicy and just as crazy and tumultuous a place as you could possibly hope to throw a meme with a 3-second fuse.
Yeah, maybe I'll hang out on Twitter for a little bit.
I don't know that I recommend it. I'm just saying that would be it's a place. That's what I'm
saying.
Yeah,
short doses.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I will let you get to all of the stuff that you have got planned, and I'm going to get to the stuff that I have got planned. But I hope that we can continue to interact in the future. I'm not sure what that looks like. But folks who are looking for the kind of military inspiration or the really specific niche military jokes that I think deserve a little more attention would be well served to go check out your material. And that will be our homework assignment for folks, unless you would like to also give people a homework assignment.
That's it, man. I think you covered it. But I also very much appreciate all that you guys do. I appreciate your boldness in saying things that are true. Please tell everyone responsible for your content creation that I said that, because I really do think this world needs more of it. So appreciate you guys. Here if y'all need anything. Thanks for asking me to come on, man. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome. I'll pass your thanks on to Lucas, the rest of the media team. But one of the things that I appreciate about T-Rex is that there is a lot more unity there than a lot of the companies that I have been either a part of or adjacent to. There is a lot more, obviously there's a lot of differences of opinion in a company of about 90 people, but I think that everybody does really appreciate the fact that the owners, the people on media, the leaders in the company do lead very boldly from personal convictions, and the company is willing to stand behind that. And so far, none of us have chickened out when it comes to saying things like abortion is murder or other stuff that's probably too spicy for some of our social media platforms. Actually, I think that's probably what's going to get us kicked off of places, not the gun stuff.
Yeah, 100%. But hey, it's worth it.